This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, it's Manveen here. For today's episode, I'm handing over to my colleague, Will Rowe, one of the team of talented producers at Stories of Our Times.
With the TT, it's such a unique race where you don't actually have a warm-up lap. So I literally drive to the paddock at 7 o'clock in the morning. I sign a load of autographs. I finally get changed and get into my leathers. You start in 10-second intervals. That year, I think I started number six, I think it was.
That's the voice of 50-year-old Richard Milky Quayle, a former motorbike racer and Isle of Man local. He's talking me through what would be his final TT race at the event back in 2003, which ended with a terrible crash.
There's millions and millions of things going through your brain. You're trying to stay cool and calm, but your head's in a bit of a mess, really. So you get off the start line, try and settle into the race as quick as possible. That year, the bike was geared for 198 miles an hour. So it shows you how fast you go. When you're going 198 miles an hour on public highway that's only 12 foot wide, I suppose. Bumps, manhole covers, telegraph poles, curbstones, stone walls either side. I never looked at the obstacles around the circuit because they're irrelevant. You don't want to hit them, so you don't look at them. I literally just see the asphalt and that's it. I just want to literally use as much track as possible, so I go from one side of the road to the other, and that's all I'm looking at. I was fifth or sixth position. I was happy with it, and pretty much I came over the start and finish line, and I always waved to my pit crew and my wife or girlfriend. It was always like a bit of a ritual I had. I always waved to them as I went over the start and finish line, just to say, yeah, I'm here, I'm okay, thanks. That's my last recollection before my crash, really, was the fact that I remember waving to my pit crew. And then I remember waking up then about 10 days later in hospital with my wife's face above me. And I'm thinking, oh, shit. Yeah, I've made a mistake here. This isn't good. And it's really, really weird. Like, that's it. That's all I can remember of it.
So you can't actually remember the moment you crashed then?
I think it's nature's way of blanking issues out. I've had lots of crashes in my life. I've probably crashed 50, 60 times in my career, but I've had two life-threatening crashes. One was in a short circuit in Wales called Pembrey, and I had a bleed on the brain there, and I can't remember crashing there either. And like I say, the crash at the TT in 2003, I can't remember it.
Every year, the Isle of Man welcomes tens of thousands of motorbike fans to celebrate a two-week festival of racing. The 2023 event begins this week, but for all the excitement and high-octane energy, there is often tragedy just around the corner.
Wrenching for everyone, the team are pacing up and down. You can see the team boss's head down, not knowing what's going on.
The statistics for crashes and fatalities at the race make for a sobering read. From 1911 until today, 266 riders have died on the course. And since the Second World War, apart from the standalone year of 1982, there's been at least one loss of life every summer. Despite all this, there doesn't seem to be any real movement for the race to be stopped. But could it be made safer? And what does the need for speed tell us about human nature? You're listening to Stories of Our Times from The Times and The Sunday Times. I'm Will Rowe. Today, the world's most dangerous race.
My name is Phoebe Luckhurst. I am a senior commissioning editor at the Sunday Times magazine.
Last year, you went to the Isle of Man. Why?
I went to the Isle of Man to investigate a motorcycle race. The Isle of Man Tourist Trophy, or the TT race. It takes place in late May, early June. But I went over a few months after the race had ended because, as I'm sure we'll get onto, it's quite a dangerous race and a number of people had died last year. So I wanted to get to the bottom of what the race is all about, why people do it, and get into the mindset of the riders and the people who love it.
So there was this extremely dangerous race you were sent over to investigate. We'll come on to just how dangerous it is in a moment. Had you been to the Isle of Man before?
I had not been to the Isle of Man before. I'm embarrassed to say I didn't totally know exactly where it was. It is off the west coast of Britain. It's kind of marooned in the middle of the Irish Sea. Population of 85,000 people, so fairly small.
As I understand it, legally it sort of sits separately.
Yeah, so it's something called a crown dependency, which means that it has its own laws, its own parliament, very relevantly to this race. It doesn't have a speed limit, for example. So you can ride at any speed you want on the island's public roads, which is why the race takes place on the Isle of Man. It's definitely a bit of a mecca for petrol heads.
Which leads us on to this race. Tell me about the Isle of Man TT. What is it?
It's a very storied, historic motorcycle race. 2 weeks a year, every year, the organisers of the TT create this course. It's a 37.73-mile course from the island's public roads. So everything from residential streets to country lanes to kind of mountainous path exists in the north of the country. And motorcyclists and fans come from all over the world to compete in time trial laps. There are different vehicle classes, and there's also a kind of sidecar series of races as well, where you have one man driving and usually another man sitting in the car beside.
It's like Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, very Wallace and Gromit. Except a lot faster, I think, than Wallace and Gromit were travelling.
What's the history of the race?
So it actually started in 1905. It started as a car race, and then it became the motorcycle time trial race. And the then secretary of the Automobile Club of Great Britain wanted to find a place where riding very fast on public roads would be permitted. And he suspected that the Manx authorities would be okay with that.
A race on English roads was impossible then because they couldn't be closed legally. And there was a 20 miles an hour speed limit. So the Manx government was approached and readily agreed to a race in the Isle of Man.
And then since World War II, there have only been 3 years when it didn't take place. In 2001, it was foot and mouth. And then 2020 and 2021, it was cancelled because of COVID. So the 2022 event was the first one in a few years. It was a kind of grand return for the race.
And six people lost their life in 2022. How often do you get fatalities in this race?
Since the Second World War, the only year that the race has taken place and there hasn't been a fatality is 1982.
That one year?
One year,
so,
yes.
So since 1945 onwards, every year that this has been raced, at least one person has died?
Yes. And that's sometimes spectators are injured as well. So it is a dangerous pursuit. Absolutely. There's no real way to square it. It's very dangerous.
It seems an obvious question, but why is it so dangerous?
The speeds involved are eye-watering. It's a very dangerous course. There are more than 200 bends, some of them kind of almost hairpin. Also because of the nature of the course, you know, you've got residential roads, you've got lampposts everywhere. There are all these sort of things that people can hit at high speed. They'll put padding in front of a wall, but hitting a wall at 140 miles per hour is still going to do some serious damage, even if there's padding in front of it.
When you arrive, I guess one of the things in your mind was to meet riders, ask locals what they thought of the race and what they thought of its dangers. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, so I was in touch with the organisers of the TT to start with because I wanted to hear a bit about how the kind of logistics of the race work. So I met with them in their office. When it came to speaking to residents of the island, I basically just kind of went into pubs and chatted to people who were all very, very kind of happy to chat. And I think it's the sort of thing where absolutely everybody on the island has a take because it is a huge event for them.
So let's take you back into those pubs that you went into. You met locals, you met residents. What did they say to you about it?
The residents love the event, and I understand why. The Isle of Man is a sleepy place, and then for 2 weeks of the year, it kind of becomes like a festival. Pubs build kind of beer gardens to spill into car parks. There's live music. I think for the only time of the year, it kind of feels like a really happening place to be. It feels a bit like a student town. It's also, it contributes a large amount of money to the local economy as well. In 2019, the visitors to the TT brought £27.1 million to the Isle of Man. It's an important thing for their economy. I think it's the lifeblood of the island.
How is it regulated? You know, how are riders looked after with all this danger?
So the organisers do a lot to try and make the race as safe as it's possible to make it. They have training. They have a world-class first response team. Last year, for the first time, they introduced this digital red flag system, which could halt the race almost instantaneously in the event of an accident, a crash, etc. This year, they brought in a simulator for new riders. Anyone who hasn't done the course in right. person before has to do this simulator with an ex-rider. The thing is, there is only so much you can do. So these are all brilliant, you know, world-leading safety protocols.
Yeah.
But it's still a race on a very tough course at extremely high speeds. So I think, you know, you hit a point at which you can't really make it any safer, whatever they might try and do.
When you were there, did any of the residents say to you, you know, Phoebe, actually, it does sit a little bit uneasily with me, but at the same time, it brings in a lot of money. Did you get that sense at all?
I chatted to one chap in the pub who did say something fairly similar to that. He said that it is dangerous and they need to make it safer, but they are. So yes, those deaths sat uneasily with him. He said the sidecar races, which some people think to be are especially dangerous, he found very difficult to watch. He'd seen a crash in a sidecar race several decades ago, I believe, and he had been unable to watch one since. He also spoke about how the race fortnight was essentially a kind of flower blooming in the desert. He loved that those 2 weeks and he couldn't pretend that he didn't.
But sidecar, seen that crash, done, not watching that again.
Couldn't do that again, which I understand.
So Phoebe, is anyone sort of bringing attention to this? Is there like a campaign to stop it?
So I have to say, I sort of expected there would be and didn't find anything to that effect. It's a curious thing about the TT Road, it's a very closed world and it's not an enormously mainstream event. If you know about it, you're probably either a resident of the Isle of Man, a rider, or a fan. And those people are fairly keen on the event continuing. So it's a lot more difficult to find someone who's a really kind of powerful dissenting voice. I mean, I think, you know, newspapers like the Sunday Times published articles when the deaths happened last year. And so people are made aware of it. I've seen the odd thing on Twitter, but I think there isn't an enormous pressure group saying this should be banned. Why is this still taking place in 2023?
You obviously went there trying to find out what is it that drives this race? Why do people come to see it? And you've certainly given me a sense of it. That's sort of festival atmosphere, the petrol heads, the fun, all that. You managed to speak to some riders. What did they say to you about actually riding the race?
So for them, it's kind of like the pinnacle of racing. That's what they wish that we understood more. I think it was Peter Hickman, who's a very decorated solo rider, who said to me that, no offence, but journalists always focus on the negatives and never on the positives. And for him, the positives are that it's really difficult. It requires an enormous amount of concentration and it's an exciting thing to compete in if this is your sport.
Six racers sadly lost their life last year in 2022. Could you tell me a bit about Mark Purslow?
Yeah, so Mark Purslow was a 29-year-old racer from Lannan in West Wales. He had competed in the TT in 2017 and then he returned again last year to compete. He'd been having a really, really good year as a racer, building up a bit of a profile. He also, his day job was as a fabricator, which is building the aluminium tanks on classic bikes. It's a very, very specialised career, but I think kind of gives you a bit of a sense of how much he loved motorbikes and kind of lived and breathed them, really.
And what happened with Mark?
At last year's TT, Mark was out riding in a practice race on the 1st of June in the evening, and he very sadly crashed at a point called Balagheri, and he later died of his injuries.
And you spoke with his sister?
I did speak with his sister. I was really grateful that she was able to find the time to chat to me. She said that nothing will ever bring Mark back. There is limited solace to be found for the family in the fact that he was doing what he wanted to do. He was living his life, and competing in the TT was a really important thing for him, something that he absolutely loved. She does take some comfort in the fact that the island was always a special place for him. And so I think it will always be a special place for their family too.
And this crash also had an effect on other riders. Can you just talk me through that?
there was run rider Dave Hewson who had passed the crash scene where Mark had crashed. And I know that he was very badly affected by it, just seeing what had happened and it being kind of really brought home to him, I suppose.
So Dave comes around the corner. He's obviously a few minutes behind Mark. He sees that there's been a crash. He sort of notices it. Dave, has he continued to race?
So Dave went back to his hotel room that evening and posted a very moving video saying that he planned to kind of go on with racing. He felt it was sort of his duty to do so. So yes, he has continued to race.
It's this bizarre situation because you're riding your favourite road and I came around the corner at Brandywell and I can just see all the way out to the sea, down the valleys, over to Douglas, and it's the most perfect view on a summer's evening. And you have a little moment to yourself, riding along in the best place in the world, but knowing what's just happened up the road. One of my favourite lines I've ever heard, and it was Steve McQueen, and he said, "The races I know aren't caught in death, they're caught in life." And he's right. Tomorrow we'll go and do it again, and we'll hope for the highs without the lows.
Coming up, so what do you do after a near fatal crash? I chat with Richard Milky Quayle 20 years after his accident on the course. That's in just a moment.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
My name's Richard Milky Quayle. I'm an ex-TT rider, TT winner, and now I'm a rider liaison officer for the Isle of Man TT races.
And Richard, why the nickname Milky?
In my younger years, I was literally, I had really blonde hair, wore glasses. I looked like a replica of the Milky Bar kid. So I embraced that really and used that as a marketing tool for me. I'd hand out Milky Bars at the racetrack when the kids came to get an autograph and a photograph. You've got to look after your fans. Your fans are the people that support you. And
if you were handing out Milky Bars to these adoring fans, how good were you as a racer?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to think that I was pretty handy. There's only in the 115 years the Isle of Man TT's been going, there's only ever been three Manxmen that have ever won it, and I'm very fortunate enough to be one of them.
Let's go back to 2003. You've talked through the accident, your lack of memory, actually, which I find fascinating. How were you physically after the accident, and then what decision did you make?
I'd already made the pivotal decision to retire. As regards to injuries, I smashed my left shoulder. I broke all my ribs in my left-hand side of my rib cage. I punctured my lung, my spleen, my kidney. I lost my spleen. They managed to save me kidney and my lung, and that all started working again. I broke my right ankle and a couple of fingers and stuff. Within 2 months, I was back and I was digging foundations for my conservatory at home. I decided to put a conservatory on my house. And yeah, so as regards to physical injuries, I was fine. It was more the mental thing, but that was good because I'd already made the conscious effort of retiring.
And what do you do now, Milky? What's your role in the Isle of Man TT these days?
I'm involved in organising the helping out with the TT. My major role with the TT nowadays is teaching all the newcomers to learn the circuit, trying to keep them as safe and as possible on the circuit and try and help them get the information into their head. I want the job to be a success. I want it to work. So I'll do anything. If it comes down to cleaning toilets or doing anything, I'll do anything just to make the event a success, because it is such an amazing event. And in today's sanitized world, the TT is probably one of the last bits of freedom that the human race has. I know it sounds crazy, but a man can actually push himself to its limits. And lots of people appreciate that. And that's why they want to come and see it and be involved in it and smell it and see it and feel it. And yeah, it's fantastic. You must get over to have a hug. It's amazing.
Let's get into a bit about the danger now, because you've made a very compelling argument, but I'll put the counter to you. In terms of the death rate for this race, it is quite stark as an outsider looking at it. Last year, 6 deaths. In 2014, 5 deaths. 2011, 6 deaths. In 2005, 9 people died. That's the most in the history of the race. I mean, Milky, how can you defend those numbers?
The TT is dangerous, and we all know it's dangerous. Motorbikes are inherently dangerous. If you try to invent a motorbike, if you said to somebody now, okay, I'm going to create a machine that does over 200 miles an hour, that's 200 brake horsepower, over 200 brake horsepower, that doesn't even stand up on its own, and it just falls on the floor, they wouldn't allow it. They would ban it straight away. They would say, no, it's not allowed. Health and safety brigade would be straight on it. And yes, it's like I say, yes, it's dangerous, but ultimately but when it comes down to the TT, there's more race than mile. We have over 250 competitors that are riding around the circuit, all trying to get a good result and push the boundaries for their riding and stuff. And the miles that we do over the fortnight is something ridiculous, like over 200,000 miles, I think it is. In any form of close contact sport as regards to motorcycling, you're always going to have incidents and crashes. And unfortunately, accidents do happen, and there's nobody holding a gun to our heads. When we set off on the start line, no one's saying, you must get on that bike. We all understand the risks. And yeah, it's a true reflection of life, I always think. Life's not easy. Life's hard. Sometimes you have good times, sometimes you have bad times. Honestly, we literally work on the safety. That's our main priority. And every year we're always trying to implement new safety measures. As regards to the infrastructure around the circuit, we have 2 medical helicopters. So when an incident does happen, it's deployed within 2 minutes of an incident happened, depending on how hard it is. And it can be to any injured rider within literally 5 minutes.
How come then the death rate hasn't really tapered off? It seems to be level. Is it the bikes have got quicker? Are people taking more risks? What is it that's sort of balancing out those efforts to make it safer with people still dying?
Technology advances, and motorbikes are the same. MotoGP technology advances, and the technology gets passed down to the road bikes. And the bikes are phenomenal bits of kit now. Accidents can happen. So you'll never, ever make it completely safe. No motorsport is completely safe. It never is. Life's not completely safe. We're only a bag of bones, aren't we? And we're not made of steel and stuff. So
a cynic might say, look, the 2 weeks of the year when the TT comes to town, economy is booming. And so basically, the Isle of Man government are quite happy for that, and they disregard the sort of the side effects of the loss of life. What do you say to that argument?
Yeah, it's whichever way you want to look at it. I mean, ultimately, again, this is the oldest motorcycle race in the world. 1907 it started. The easy option would be to say, let's just draw a line under it. Let's go into the back and be woke like everybody else wants to be in the world. Whereas actually, I always think the government are very forward thinking, let's it's something that everybody enjoys when it's here.
And as a racer, I mean, what you do is hugely impressive. I can't quite get my head around it. Have you ever thought about that maybe part of the thrill for you is that you might die? You push yourself to those limits.
No, I don't like being scared. I literally don't like being scared. For me, it's not the feeling, thinking of, I could die and I could... Sod that. The last thing I want to do is die, So it's ultimately... The reason why I'm doing it is for the pleasure. The pleasure of pushing yourself to your limits. I mean, everyone's wired different, aren't they? Some people want to push themselves to the limits and some people don't. And for me, I've always been competitive. I always like to push myself and better myself. I want to keep climbing up that ladder. I don't want to just sit there and think, this is all right. I want to try and if I won £1 million, I'd be thinking, well, I've got £1 million. I want to have £2 million. If you want to win a race, you win one race. You want to win two. You want to win three. You want to win four. That's the way I'm wired.
So you went, you met people, you chatted, you've spoken with riders, you've spoken with bereaved family members, you've come back. Do you think it should still continue?
Not a straightforward question to answer. I couldn't stop thinking about the families of people whose relatives race. I couldn't imagine personally putting my family through something like that. I do think there's probably something a little bit selfish about it, but I think it's complicated to answer the question as to whether it should be banned, because a lot of the people who take part think that they should be allowed to do it. A lot of the families say that they don't have a problem with it. So basically, I found myself feeling very uncertain. I can say I don't think I would ever be a fan of the sport, and I'd be very upset if someone I loved wanted to take part, because I'd just be really worried. But I don't come down on either side as to whether I think it should be banned.
What do you think all that says about human nature?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Some of the riders put it to me, the decision to ride is a personal choice. They're doing so because they wish to do so, and the fans are doing so because they enjoy watching it. So I think that there's a slightly similar to the way that the Isle of Man has a kind of slightly libertarian slanting philosophy where people can make their own choices to do things. That's the philosophy of the TT. I think it also says that people really enjoy watching people do dangerous things. That's definitely an element of it. And also, all sport is kind of drama and thrill, and to some extent, depending on the sport, risk as well. And I think this is just a very extreme version of that.
Do you see a stage where it will ever be banned?
I think this year will be an important one, because the organisers have definitely put a lot of extra safety measures in place. If this is another year where there are many casualties and fatalities, people will have to look at the race again. I think if we're perhaps a lobby of bereaved families calling for it to be banned, that would maybe slightly change the terms a little bit. But I think it's difficult to say. I mean, it's continued for all this time and has had so many fatalities up until this point. If it hasn't been banned now, maybe it won't ever be.
You've been listening to Stories of Our Times, a podcast brought to you thanks to the subscribers of The Times and The Sunday Times, with me, Will Rowe, and my guests, Phoebe Luckhurst, Senior Commissioning Editor at The Sunday Times magazine, and former Isle of Man TT champion, Richard Milky Quayle. You can find all of Phoebe's work at thetimes.co.uk, and we've put a link to her long read on the Isle of Man TT in the description notes of this podcast. It's a great article with amazing extra details, well worth your time. The producer on today's podcast was Oliver Adamson, the executive producer is Kate Ford, and sound design was by David Crackles. Thanks for listening, and see you again soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.